Buffon, and then Ronaldo! Oh! What a goal by Cristiano Ronaldo!
Messi to the near post! Messi to the net! Ronaldo Kiyoko now. Here's a Honduran. He'll whip it in back to the far post. Elise! Albert Elise! La Pantarita! It's a Honduran connection!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome back to the show as we roll on here. What a night it was last night at the Houston Sports Awards. A tremendous event down there at the Hilton Americas. As we welcome you back here, a moment here for John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. Joining us now, Dynamo General Manager Matt Jordan. Matt, thank you for coming on the show.
Hey, Glenn. Thanks a lot for having me.
All right. So we're going to bang through quickly here some topics. So let's start with some of the new signings. I just kind of want to go one by one through them and get comments from you. So let's start with Victor Cabrera, who you acquired from Montreal, and kind of the need that you want to fill with him coming to the club.
Absolutely. Well, you know, a big goal for us heading into the off season was to continue to get the team a bit younger. Victor is a player. Actually, I'd watched when he was with River Plate back when he was coming up, right as I was coming to the Dynamo, actually. And so I'd always kind of tracked him when he went to Montreal. And I think what really stood out about Victor is that, you know, the way his aggressive nature and the way that when the forward steps into the midfield, he really steps up high and he pressures hard on the attacker when he checks to the ball. That's a characteristic that Tab really likes and that we feel is a really good fit. We also felt, you know, it was good to bring in somebody that had adapted to the league, and it was ready, turnkey, ready to go. And at just 26 years old, we felt it was a good fit for us. And, you know, and I think, you know, we appreciate everything Romel did for us, but it had just gotten to the point where it had ran its course here. And so we're happy to bring in assets with that transaction for Romel. And then we basically maintain the majority of any sell-on percentages if he's moved outside the league, which is a really important element to that deal. So it was just a win-win for us on a lot of different levels.
Zarek Valentin, who I know is Tab Ramos, likes him a lot. It looks like we're going to have a real battle for the right-back position with Jose Bezama and him.
Yeah, no, Zarek is somebody both Tab and I know very well. When we were an expansion team in Montreal, we drafted him from Chivas. And Tab had him with the U-20s as well. The great thing with Zarek, he's just a very good soccer player, can play right back and left back, very comfortable on the ball, good at joining the attack. Again, you know, we really want to try to get our outside backs involved. And it's definitely going to be a battle between him and Jose on the right side, and that's what we want. But we really like Zarek's utility. Again, very appreciative of everything that AJ brought to the table for us over the last few years, but it was a position we wanted to get younger at. And the other thing I'd say was Zarek, I mean, he's a big personality in the locker room. You know, has just a really great energy about him with everything he does. And so we feel from a leadership standpoint, he's going to fit right in with us.
Yeah, he's a great interview. He's been on the show when he was on Portland as well. Marco Maric now, the goalkeeping situation figured out. Now, he takes an international slot up. What was the thinking with him there? And then you being an ex-goalkeeper, I'm very interested to hear what you say about what you think are his best qualities.
Yeah, well, Marco is a very good goalkeeper. You know, what really stands out about him is he's a commanding presence, got a strong mentality, a winning mentality. You know, we've been tracking him for quite some time. We watched a couple games live. We traveled to St. Paul, also our goalkeeper coach, as well, to go meet with him in person. Came up, you know, obviously coming, he has a really good formation, has a good size. He has the ability to play higher up the field a little bit to close some space between our back line and when our back line is stepping up. And so, you know, and he's a very good shot stopper. You know, we were looking at a lot of different keepers, and that was an area, I mean, and, you know, again, very appreciative of Joe and Tyler and everything they've done for the club, but we just felt we needed to upgrade in that position, and we feel that Marco's an upgrade. You know, we looked at so many goalkeepers this offseason. I think I told you that the last time I was on your show. You know, looked at William Yarbrough as well at Lyon in Mexico. We had a little bit of a, another team had a discovery on him. We got talking to that team and the league, and the framework of the deal just didn't really make sense for us. And what we really like about Marco is, I mean, he's 24 years old. You know, he's got, you know, over 130 professional games in Europe, and he's really good on crosses, and those are just areas we wanted to strengthen. So we're really excited to have him.
Dynamo General Manager Matt Jordan joining us. We're going over some of the new acquisitions this year. Let's go on to Marcelo Palomino. Now, a young talent, you had wanted him prior. You didn't get him prior after the academy. It took a while. The deal has finally come through. Now, what do you project out on Marcelo? I mean, is this a year you could see him getting a lot of playing time?
Well, we're really happy to have Marcelo, you know, with us. You know, he's been in our academy since he was 11, 12 years old. You know, we had extended an offer to sign him, and really, you know, he and you have to respect it. You know, he wanted to look at some opportunities in Europe as well, and I think really it's just really positive story. You know, to have a kid that's been in our academy, you know, from such a young age, to be joining us, we think he's got a good projection. You know, he's worked with Tab, so there's a level of familiarity there as well. You know, and I think with Marcelo, you know, he's been playing as an eight, you know, centrally. He can play as a 10. He can also play as an inverted winger on the left in a 4-3-3 or 4-2-3-1, similar to where we've seen Memos, have a lot of success. So, look, I mean, the one thing that's great is, you know, Tab's going to, you know, Tab, you know, with his background, and it's such a good fit for us in the direction we're taking the club. I mean, these guys, if they're doing well, they're going to get opportunities. And we're really excited to have Marcelo. He was just with the U-20s, and, you know, we spoke to the coaches, and he was one of the best players of the camp there. And so we're excited. It's going to take a bit of time, like it always does anytime you transition into being a full-time professional, but we're excited about him.
Yeah, he's come with a lot of high kudos from a lot of different people. Now, is he the answer to the question that you and I talked a lot about, and that was getting a number eight that's goal dangerous to potentially partner Vera and give you more threat out of central midfield?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, with the acquisition of Darwin Quintero, you know, that was really important for us. You know, I think it was an important, we believe it was an important acquisition. You know, obviously, first and foremost, it makes sense on the field. But right after hiring Tab, you know, there was an opportunity to get Darwin. And the nice thing with Darwin is, you know, in a 4-3-3, he can play as one of those guys centrally. You know, also he can play on the left or the right. And, you know, also I'd say Memo. You know, we see Memo and Tab sees Memo having that ability to be a box-to-box number eight. But I also think that, you know, getting back to your question, Marcelo has those qualities. I think the biggest thing you see with young players is they're transitioning into the pro game is in transition. Not to use that same word a couple of times, but, you know, transition in particular from offense to defense, you know, and that's the biggest thing that we're really impressing a lot with Paul Holliker and our academy staff is working a lot in transition. And so I think, you know, that'll be a key factor for Marcelo to continue to develop when he's playing centrally. But he has the quality to contribute and, you know, make late runs. And so we're excited about him.
Are you still looking for an additional midfielder at this time? Because I know the window's still open.
Yeah, look, a real important off-season objective for us, Glenn, mm-hmm. was we really wanted to strengthen each line. And that's something, you know, if you look at going from goal with Marco, and then you look at Victor and Zarek, and then in the center of the park, you have, you know, bringing in Marcelo and, you know, Tab, who sees Memo as being able to play centrally as well. Then you have Darwin in the attack. You know, we really feel we accomplished that this offseason, strengthening each of our lines. I think it's, you know, we're really excited just, you know, to get to work.
Matt, let's talk.
I will answer. You know, we are always looking to improve the team, and we have looked at some central players. You know, from box to box number eight, but it's like anything. You know, you want to make sure the players you're bringing fit the profiles that we've outlined and the formations we've outlined. And so it's important. But we are continuing to look, and I'd say centrally that's an area we're looking. But, you know, Tomas Martinez as well, with his time at Defensa y Justicia, you know, he played a lot in that role when he was there on loan from River Plate. And so, you know, it's a role we feel we have a few guys that can fit into.
Darwin Quintero really is the big offseason signing, correct? For all the fans that continue to clamor for a DP, do they really know who he is? And how do you feel about what I just said?
I agree with you. I think that obviously the hiring of Tab and you know, the direction we're taking the club, I mean, that, you know, I guess that could be viewed as a DP signing as well, just with the pedigree he brings to the table. But on the player front, for sure, I mean, you know, Darwin is a difference maker in this, you know, obviously from his time in Mexico for the better part of a decade, he's one of the best players in that league with his time at Santos Laguna and Club America. I mean, he's a difference maker. He's been an MLS All-Star. Last year, he was the U.S. Open Cup Golden Boot winner and led Minnesota to the U.S. Open Cup final. So, yeah, I mean, he is for sure a key acquisition this offseason, and we're very, very appreciative of our ownership's commitment to bring him. It wasn't easy.
So, Matt, I had a reputable source tell me that RGV could be moving back to Houston in a year. I put this out. You called me. You corrected me. You said there's no truth to it. What is the future of RGV? Is it staying down there for a couple years? Will you eventually try to move this back? What is it, for clarification purposes, for the fans?
Well, look, our partnership with RGV has been an important one for us, and it's a partnership we're very committed to. You know, I don't have it in front of me, but I think we've signed or transitioned up, you know, 12 to 13 players through that part of our development structure. And so it's, you know, we're very thankful and appreciative for our partnership down there. You know, and even this, you know, if you look at this preseason, we have Nico Lamoy from our academy who's in with us, Isidro Martinez, you know, and Andrew Samuels, some, you know, and several others. And so it's an important piece of the puzzle for us, Glenn. And you know, we're full steam ahead and preparing for the season. Gerson's in with the first team right now, and Nick and him have been doing a great job with that team. And so we're excited about what the future holds with that partnership.
Well, Matt, thank you so much for all this great information. Looking forward to having you on the show regularly throughout the year.
Glenn, thank you so much for having me on as well. And thank you for everything you do in the soccer community here in Houston.
That's Dynamo General Manager Matt Jordan. We'll take a quick break. More to come.
Listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5
and on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Welcome back to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. We go into our final segment here tonight, and it is a good one. Reminder, a moment here for John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm. John and his firm are personal injury attorneys. They're going to bring you a personalized approach. Daspit Law .com, 713-322-HURT. They're bilingual. Now, no one wants to get in an accident, but if you get in a car, motorcycle, industrial, construction, plant, refinery, 18-wheeler, the Daspit Law Firm is going to have you covered. They'll work for you 24/7, nights and weekends. Get that representation you need when in an accident. You get it from the Daspit Law Firm. John Daspit, the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. They are our presenting sponsor. Final interview of the night. Good friend, we met today at a wonderful restaurant called Patagonia, an Argentine steakhouse run by Sebastian Abraham, one of the owners. Outstanding place. Here's an interview with Oliver Luck that touches on a number of subjects, including the sport of soccer.
Well, I got to tell you, if we're ever going to do an interview, this is how you do an interview, right? You're a lucky man like I am to be sitting here looking at this Argentine parrilla. This is Patagonia Grill and Cafe. And, of course, Oliver, thanks
this
for being
by
here.
This looks, by the way, delicious. Oh. I mean, it's unbelievable what they can do.
It's going to be very difficult for me to get through this interview without going to that place. So let's first start off with the XFL. You're going to launch the league soon. Talk a little bit about the league and kind of the dynamics of it and this window that you're looking to capitalize on.
Sure. So, you know, I'll take a step back and sort of explain why I'm doing this. Football has become America's favorite sport. You know, I'm 59 years old. I can remember when baseball was our national pastime, but it's really shifted. You know, the NFL, major college ball, all very popular. So I think there's an opportunity now, you know, to have a league that isn't a developmental league for, you know, the NFL. Our job is not to, you know, prepare players to play for the National Football League, which is a great league and probably doesn't need anybody's help. You know, but we think there's an opportunity in the spring when football isn't being played to offer a high-quality product, a high-quality football league where it's fast-paced, up-tempo, not as much downtime, right? Not as much idle time, where there's more flow, more rhythm to the game. You're getting games done like they used to be in 3 hours, right? Compressing all that. Same number of plays. The average NFL game has 172, 173 plays. We think we can reach that for most of our games. And just offer folks a reasonably priced $20. You can go sit at TDECU Stadium in the front row and watch the, you know, the team play. But a fun, up-tempo, fast-paced game that features great players, great coaches, guys like Bob Stoops, June Jones. I mean, these are real football men. They know how to.
How'd you get Stoops into this league? Because I always liked Stoops when he was at Oklahoma.
He's always been one of my favorites. Of course, won a national championship. You know, he's a legendary coach, really. And he's a relatively young guy. He's only 58 years old. He's doing this in large part because one of his sons is playing college football at Oklahoma, and Bob wants to watch him in the fall. Doesn't want to, you know, full-time responsibility in the fall. He's doing full-time now in the spring, obviously, but we got Bob because this job sort of fit in his lifestyle that he wanted.
Got
it. We think there's an opportunity to build a league. Vince McMahon is our founder, our owner. He's a brilliant guy in terms of what he's been able to do with WWE, building that company up. So the spring leagues have a long history, as we all know, particularly here in Houston. The Houston Gamblers were the USFL edition years ago.
Oh.
But I think there's a pretty good chance for us to kind of get this established in large part, Glenn, because Fox and ESPN, ABC, you know, the Disney companies, will be broadcasting our games. So there's never been a startup league that's had that kind of TV exposure. So I think that gives us a real leg up.
We're talking to Oliver Luck here. And how about the makeup of the players? Because I would assume there's going to be some players that have played in the NFL that were on the fringe of making the NFL. And then right to my mind goes the fact that these guys have something to prove, probably.
There are a lot of guys out there who, you know, have 2-3 years of NFL experience, get cut. They're in that yo-yo. They're up and down. They might play a half a season, get off. They're on a practice squad. They go back up for a year or two. So it's very competitive, as you know, to make an NFL roster. I mean, my gosh, it's hard to be one of those 50.
Not that
guys.
I've ever tried, but it looks pretty competitive from the outside.
It's tough. So there's a lot of players that are just not quite there, right, in terms of having a long NFL career. They're coming to us. And they're coming to us because we offer them an opportunity. We give them a platform where they can kind of show their skill set. So there's guys who've played 5-6 years in the league. There's some younger guys coming straight out of school that, you know, were in an NFL camp but got cut, and they probably need another bit of seasoning, I think, before they can give it another shot. But your point about guys being hungry is absolutely true, because these guys have been humbled a little bit. They're all college All-Americans and all-conference players, but they've been humbled. Yeah. They've been cut.
Humility is a wonderful thing.
It's a great, in legitimate, reasonable doses.
Yes.
You don't want too much humility.
Not too much.
But I think these guys will play hard. They'll play really, you know, for themselves and for their team, because, you know, they want a better future out there, and they see us as really an ideal platform in the spring.
Speaking of Oliver Luck, now, something tells me that when we acquired the San Jose Earthquakes in those great years, 6 and 7, when you were running the show here in Houston in the MLS, something just makes me think that there's kind of starting this XFL up. There's some similarities to those times here in Houston, which, you know, it was such a fun time. It was almost off the rails. It was an intimate time. There was just so much stuff going on. Is it kind of similar?
There are a lot of similarities. So there are really a couple of jobs that I had that, you know, are really helping me with the building the XFL. One was, of course, the Dynamo job, which was a startup. you remember the players, Dominic Kinnear and you know, the coach, right, they all came down.
Talk about problem solving.
Yeah, we had a couple of months to launch the entire thing, and we were over at U of H where the Houston Roughnecks are playing now, so familiar with dealing with the University of Houston in a startup, you know, capacity. But those were freewheeling days. The other experience that's really helped me is my experience with NFL Europe, which, again, was startup, brand new. And, you know, trying to sort of explain American football to a European audience, and how do you sort of organically build fans and get them excited and get them to be a part of that, you know, experience, which I think, you know, we did early on with the Dynamo. I mean, the organic sort of nature of that initial fan base, El Batallón and the Texian Army and all those sort of folks that were just happy to see professional soccer in Houston, people getting excited, and families and kids and you know, the chants and some of the bad stuff that happened as well, fights, between some of our fan clubs and, let's say, the Dallas guys coming down. Those were all organic, and that was the beauty of it, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, those lessons have helped me try to get, you know, some, you know, things done with the way we're operating the XFL.
We're talking to Oliver Luck, but inspirational leaders are needed as well. Look, you were amongst the fans all the time. I mean, I get that all the time from people. Oh, Oliver, he was amongst the fans. You know, you knew the game from being in Europe. You were amongst the fans. And that's something that's everlasting with you.
Yeah. I took that lesson. I took that lesson from Drayton McLean.
Mm-hmm.
So I ran the Sports Authority for a number of years. We were, you know, built Minute Maid Park. Drayton McLean would watch the first inning or two of an Astros game, and, you know, his front row seat.
Yeah.
And then he would spend the rest of the game literally with his back to the field, shaking hands with people, asking them what they liked or didn't like about the stadium, what they liked about concessions.
Yeah.
He was so accessible. And that taught me a lesson. And even with, you know, 35,000 people on an Astros game, you can touch, you know, 300 or 500 personally, you know, and do that game in, game out. You reach a lot of people. And, you know, people want to know that you care, right? They want to know that the boss cares about this team, that it's not just sort of a toy to have, right?
Yeah.
But that they care. They want to see the team win. They're emotionally invested, just like a fan is. I love doing that. I had the best time.
Oh, I always watched you, and I said, man, this guy is loving life. I mean, he just loves his job. You are a people person. I don't think there's any question. Now, when you see the current Dynamo, the move which you helped engineer to get into this new stadium, things did change. I get it. Expenses change. Things are different. But it seems a little more homogenized. It seems like it lost some of that off-the-rails nature it had over at Roberts.
You know, I that's probably accurate. I think, you know, going into that new building, which, you know, was a great building, great location, et cetera, you know, I think there was an opportunity to kind of keep it organic and keep it real, as the kids would say, and, you know, not get too corporate. Right, yeah, that's a challenge with sports.
It is,
you know, because, you know, sports is really no different than any other industry, and, you know, there's a tendency sometimes to be a little bit too corporate. The lawyers have too much of a say. The risk managers, no, you can't do that. Well, you have to. That might be dangerous.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes you have to kind of roll the dice a little bit, and you got to keep people in the forefront. You know, sports is all about people.
Yeah.
My job as a commissioner, I've got 500 and some players. I've got, I don't know, 100 coaches. It's all about people.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about people. And that's really true, I think, for you know, organizations like the Dynamo and you know, other franchises that are still relatively young in their existence. You've got to invest in the people, and the people have to know that you care. And I think that is as Drayton as I would see it. And I watched this firsthand. You know, that wears off on people, you know. And they, I think, you know, then begin to accept it and sort of take on some of that passion and some of that emotion. They become evangelists, right? And I think early on with the Dynamo, we had a group of people that were out there evangelizing for us.
Yeah.
Some of them were crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And some of them were a little bit half nuts.
You need the crazies.
We had people evangelizing.
You need the
for
eclectic.
Us. Yeah. I just ran
And by the way, let's also say, you could not have had a better bunch of guys when it came to intimacy, in the community,
right.
Accessibility.
Totally.
I mean, that is one thing that will always jump out to me.
When I think back to, you know, Coach Kinnear and then, you know, Brian Ching and Bobby Boswell and, you know, Stu Holden for a couple of
Wade
seasons.
Wade Barrett, all these
us,
guys.
And Wade Barrett and
D. Rosario.
I mean, there's just unbelievable. Pat Onstad. I mean, they were great guys. I think everywhere they went, they made a positive impression. And they were aware that they were part of this effort to go talk to people, you know?
Sure.
Because they were coming into this market, and they were really the ones who kind of established
it. There was a time where you still had to really, as players, make a push to sell your game. I mean, you had to be a salesman back then.
I'll tell you a story. Ching would I hope he remembers this, but I went to Brian and I said, hey, I know you're from Hawaii. I know you're a true blue American. You play ball here, you know, college soccer, et cetera. But can we package you as an Asian American?
Yeah.
Because we want to, you know, tap into the Asian American community here in Houston, which, as you know, is significant.
Even more significant
and
now.
And of course, Brian, you know, he said, of course you can. So we brought Brian around, and they loved him. Right? The Asian American community loved him, you know, and that was just an example of some of the stuff that you have to do to, you know, to really
gotta touch think
people.
Outside
you got to touch people.
Talking to Oliver Luck here. All right. Speaking of touching people, you know, you went to WVU, back to your alma mater. You were a quarterback there. In fact, I think when I was at a small liberal arts college called Davis and Elkins, I drove up to watch you play football in Morgantown and then in front of big crowds, and then we'd come up and play WVU in soccer in front of not very big crowds. But what was it like going back? Because you were a beloved guy on that campus and really helping push the WVU Mountaineer athletic program in the right direction.
I love college athletics. I think it's a great institution in American life. And it's got all kind of challenges, as we know, right? And certainly today with legislation, a bunch of different states, you know, adverse federal court decisions, there were real challenges for the governance of college athletics. But I love college sports. For a school like West Virginia that doesn't have, you know, for a state that has no professional sports teams, the Mountaineers, you know, football, basketball, you know, some of the other sports, serves as the state representative, the state team. So it's very important to people there.
Yeah.
And I knew that going in, which really helped me. And given sort of my background there, I was able to, you know, accomplish a number of different things. Maybe most importantly, moving, you know, the Mountaineers from a conference that, you know, doesn't really exist anymore as we knew it, the Big East, you know, into the Big 12, which has been very healthy, you know, in terms of competition and compensation. You know, the dollars have to flow to make college athletics work. But it was a lot of fun. I also, you know, had a number of things I wanted to do. I was able to get those done really in the first 4 or 5 years, and that allowed me to kind of leave, you know, having felt good about sort of what I was able to, and not just me, it was a bunch of others.
Now, when you look at the WVU program now, do you feel like it's still ascending?
I think it's in a much better place in terms of, you know, all the sports and also the financial situation, which is important. You never want the athletic program to be a drag on university finances, right? Because, you know, that's really the tail wagging the dog. But I think it's in a good spot. I'll say this, it's much better competition. Playing Kansas in basketball, playing Texas and Oklahoma in football, part of the Olympic sports, right? Swimming and diving and you name it, right? Baseball. Baseball in the Big 12 is incredibly talented, and you know, we have to be a part of that. So we've elevated our game across the board, I think, in a big, big way.
Yeah.
So that was part one of Oliver Luck. Stay with us here on Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5. Part two is coming up. Quick word here for Advantage BMW Midtown. I've driven a BMW for years. I've leased, I've owned from Advantage BMW Midtown numerous times. I love the drive of the BMW in an X5 right now. It is an amazing machine. Absolutely love it. Throw my bike in the back. It's exceptional. The other thing I love is the customer service at BMW. Second to none. Advantage BMW Midtown has you covered with sales, service, finance. It can be done so easy. So get that hometown advantage at Advantage BMW Midtown, Advantage BMW Houston, TX.com. Go down there, say hello to Philip, say hello to Justin. They are big soccer fans. Stay with us, more to come. Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5.
You are listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Final segment of the night coming up on Soccer Matters ESPN 97.5. Again, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. John and his firm, personal injury attorneys. They bring you a personalized approach. DaspitLaw.com, 713-322-HURT. They're bilingual. John, a big soccer fan. He went over and saw Chelsea play at Stamford Bridge while I was over at Manchester United. We were texting back and forth, but we appreciate John and his firm, the Daspit Law Firm, supporting the sport of soccer and getting us on the airwaves. All right, here is part two of the XFL's Oliver Luck.
Then you go to the NCAA. By the way, we're talking to Oliver Luck. Then you go to the NCAA. Now, there's always this kind of skull and bones power secrecy type of thing around the NCAA. What was it like being on the inside of that organization? Because I ran into you a number of times at NCAA College Cups while I was doing commentary, and we talked about men's soccer. What was it like working for the NCAA?
I enjoyed it. I was, as a lawyer, I was curious about sort of, you know, how the level of governance at the NCAA, you know, and the regulatory scope, how that operates and how it functions. And there is a little bit of a sort of, you know, mist that shrouds.
Yeah, I'm not sure skull and bones was the best way to describe it,
but it's a good analogy.
Secret organization.
Yeah, yeah. But I will say this. The people there care about college athletics. You know, they serve an enormously diverse group of schools. I think there's something like 1,200 schools that are represented by the NCAA Division I, II, and III. Some are, you know, big school, big state schools. Some are small private liberal arts colleges. Some are religiously affiliated.
Yeah.
You know, you across the board, for some, sports are hugely important. Think Ohio State, you know. For others, they're not, right? But everybody has a vote. You know, it's a democratic system in many respects. So it's a hard group to govern. It's a hard group to sort of steer in the right direction. We all think about big-time college football, big-time college basketball.
Right.
But then we realize, oh, there's Davis and Elkins and little old Elkins, West Virginia, that has, you know, a number of sports teams. And they're just trying to, you know, have a great experience for their young men and women.
Yeah.
Right, to have them grow and develop. And they don't really care much about what Ohio State wants, because that may not be, you know, indicative of what they may want. So it's a big group, and I think it reaffirmed my belief in the good about college sports, but also highlighted some of the challenges that the institution has.
Do you think the tertiary sports, in all honesty, did they get the attention they deserve because they're not the revenue generators?
They don't.
And I'm talking about soccer.
Yeah, they don't. I mean, you talk about soccer and all the way down, you know, to field hockey and some of those fencing. They really don't, right? I think they're secure in many respects because they do offer great opportunities.
Yes.
And those sports, I think, as of the last 5 or 6 years, have begun to realize, oh, we need to be a little bit more aggressive in raising money, you know, for soccer. In fact, WVU just got a $10 million gift for men's soccer, which was the largest gift, I think, in the history of any sport outside of football and basketball. So I think they're getting more aggressive, but the value that those kids, the values they learn from the, you know, participants, I think are life lessons. So I think there's every reason to want to keep that structure in place. It's also hugely important for our Olympic movement. We wouldn't be, you know, dominating the Summer Olympics, but for track programs and swimming programs and field hockey and you know, not necessarily soccer. It's
well,
in a
soccer
level.
On the women's
soccer,
side, women's the college
soccer,
game is
yeah, you're right. Women's soccer
big
to
time.
A certain you're right about
development,
that. But all those Olympic sports really contribute to the, you know, to the success we've had at the Olympic level.
All right, so. Yeah, one question people ask me a lot about you, and we're talking to Oliver Luck. We're at the beautiful restaurant Patagonia here. It's a grill and cafe, but it's all Argentine style. Come in here. Sebastian's our great friend. This is a great place. Let's just talk a little bit about you personally, because there's a lot of people that have come to me and said, if only Oliver Luck wanted to day-to-day run the Dynamo, was that something that ever interest you? Would it interest you? And I'm not speaking specifically now relevant to anything here in Houston.
Sure.
But at the time, were you thinking, well, I will run this team day to day? Or was it, you know, let me get it lifted off. Let me get the stadium in place. And then I'm going to move on because I'm not necessarily wanting to do day to day. Because they're two different things, right?
No, absolutely. So my viewpoint was, you know, I was running the Sports Authority. I went to my board, city, county appointed officials, right? All, you know, fairly influential people. And I said, listen, we just built, you know, the beautiful baseball stadium. We built a beautiful football and rodeo arena. We built a beautiful basketball and hockey and concert arena at Toyota Center.
Yeah.
This is one sport we don't have. And we're the biggest country, the city in the country that doesn't have this sport. It's, you know, professional soccer. And they said, well, go get a team.
Yeah.
I mean, you remember this, right?
Yeah.
So we went around and, you know, long story short, right, earthquake moved down. So I wanted to establish that team to show, you know, the sports authority in the city and the county that this was, in fact, a soccer market that would respond and respond well. So I spent probably the first two and a half years really focused on just getting things going, right? And then a second, you know, major sort of thing that I was working on was getting the, you know, a we don't use this phrase anymore, but a soccer-specific stadium. Yes. Remember that? That was the, that was all the rage back in the day, right?
Yes.
So, you know, I think everybody realized, you know, MLS in any market was only going to flourish if there was a stadium that the team controlled, right?
Yep.
So we needed some public help.
All the revenue streams.
All the streams, additional events, you name it. We needed public help for that. So I spent probably the remaining 2.5 years just working hard, right, with then Mayor White, with his administration, and then Mayor Parker came in, right? Anise came in, won the election. Yep. The bill was term limited out, if I recall correctly, and dealing with the county as well, right, because the county was involved. We got the TIF. I mean, that just took a couple, 3 years. Got bankers. This was the middle of the real estate crisis, but we found bankers that were willing to accept the risk of, you know, taking those TIF payments, you know, for the next 20 years, to kick back money to build the building. So once that, got finalized, and once we sort of, started on the construction process, I felt like I had, done what I'm best at doing, and I'm not best at necessarily running the franchise on a day-to-day basis. That's probably not where my strengths lie. So at that point, I had an opportunity to go back to West Virginia, become the AD. That school, had a little bit of an athletic crisis in the sense of the Big East falling apart. And, so I think I'm better at sort of some of those larger issues that seem daunting, but, we'll give it a shot, as opposed to sort of the real good day to day. There are others that are better than me. In fact, during my Dynamo days, Chris Kennedy, I hired Chris from the old Metro Stars, and he spent most of his time on sort of the day-to-day issues with the training center and whatever else. And we also forget part of that deal with the city was developing the Houston Amateur Sports Park, mm-hmm. and 100 acres of property out there, and building that Dynamo Training Center and the all the fields out there. Mm-hmm. That was a big project as well, which the city was really awesome, to work with us on that and make that happen. So, we had a lot of sort of big picture things that I wanted to get started on, at least, and get to a point where I felt like they would happen.
So, this city's full of authentic soccer fans. I mean, we're sitting in a very authentic Argentine restaurant. We do know we have an Argentine community here.
That's right.
We have all these passionate soccer communities that are very ethnic based. They fill up bars on weekends watching differing teams. The trick is getting the authentic fan to MLS games. How did we do that? And how much of that has to be hands-on? And I mean, literally drilling down into those communities.
Yeah. I don't know how you do it otherwise, right? It has to come through human contact. At the end of the day, we're still human. We may rely too much on social media and all the other stuff, but at the end of the day, we're still humans. And I think, you need to reach out, the team, because people love Houston. People that move here, first-generation immigrants, I think they find themselves really enjoying this crazy Texas city that's just grown like a mushroom since I first came here in the early 80s. It's unbelievable, right? Oh. And you've been here a long time as well. So people want to connect with Houston. And, for many folks, that connection, could and should come through their favorite sport, soccer. It doesn't matter where they're from, right? We had cab driver specials early on in the Dynamo history because a lot of the cabbies were from Nigeria and other places, right? They had a little sort of thing going. It was a little group, and we did all kind of sort of crazy promotions. But I think ultimately you have to reach people. You have to touch them, and you have to touch them not just in the pocketbook, but you got to touch them. I think right here, right here in the heart.
It's such a great game because it brings so many differing personalities, people, groups together, nationalities. It's wonderful. All right, so I know if I didn't ask this question before we were done, I'd probably get knocked down by my buddies on the other shows here at ESPN 97.5. All right, tell us a little bit about Andrew and kind of your thoughts, number one, as a father, and then maybe from him with his outstanding NFL career, but it gets cut short here.
Yeah, well, He's doing great. He's doing very well. His wife just had a baby about 6 weeks ago, Lucy.
Wonderful.
Lucy Marta Luck, and they're living in Indianapolis. She's a Stanford girl, former gymnast at Stanford. He's doing fine. He's healthy. He's kind of recovered. He got beat up a lot, and it wasn't just getting injured. Every NFL player, every professional athlete expects to be injured during his or her career. For him, the challenge was all the rehab. It just got so dull and so boring. And at some point, you wake up and you say, I've had enough. You know? He's a fairly modest guy. He, you know, earned a bunch of money. At one point, he was the highest paid, you know, player in the National Football League. So he was smart to, you know, dump most of that money in the bank. So he's, you know, he's set, you know, financially for, you know, virtually his entire life. And I think he just wanted to sort of start on the next chapter. And, you know, what's funny is you're seeing a number of NFL players start to do that. Luke Kuechly, who I think came out the same year as Andrew, you know, just retired. A couple of different players, you know, in that sort of 7, 8, 9 year range, you know, because they can afford to now. And, you know, and there are concerns, and this wasn't the case with my son, but there are concerns about, you know, brain trauma. Certainly for linebackers that are, you know, they're in the mix there, you know, virtually every play. So he's healthy. He's still a huge soccer fan.
Yeah, he was always a big soccer fan.
He now has the freedom to wake up on a Sunday morning and not, you know, go to the stadium and get ready for a game, but to watch, you know, the Premier League or Saturday morning or whatever, right? So he's still following, you know, the game, still follows the Dynamo, you know, when he can. And we'll see what he ends up putting his time into. His wife was a gymnast at Stanford, and she produces gymnastics events for a number of different networks. She'll be working the Olympics this summer over in Tokyo.
Oh, wow.
So I think he'll play Mr. Mom for, you know, a month or so over in Tokyo and enjoy maybe a little bit of travel in Asia. Hopefully this flu virus doesn't overwhelm all of the activity over in Asia. But he's doing well. Thank you for asking.
Yeah.
He had a good career. And now I'm taking my dad hat off.
Yes.
Just as a football guy. I admire players who can determine when and how they leave the game. Doesn't often happen. Most players are told when they have to leave the game because they're cut, right?
Right.
But for players, you know, particularly guys who've played 7, 8 years and have had some success, for them to be able to say, I'm done, I enjoyed it, played my heart out, you know, had some great moments, maybe didn't achieve all I wanted to achieve, but life goes on, right?
Yeah.
You know, and so I, you know, and I think about all these older quarterbacks in the NFL, you know, Tom Brady, Phillip Rivers, Eli, you know, Ben Roethlisberger, say, geez, guys, you've played for, you know, 17, 18 years.
Yeah.
What do you have left to prove?
Do you think some of it might be fear of ending something that you're just so comfortable with, that you're so talented at?
I mean, I admire it in the sense they still want to compete. That's impressive at that age, right? Because it takes a lot more work to get your body, you know, ready to play. But I also think, you know, enjoy life. You're 43 or 42 or whatever years old. You know, enjoy the rest of enjoy your kids growing up.
Hopefully,
you know,
being able to walk.
Well, I mean, I've seen it, right? We've all seen it with guys. It's a tough game. Now, quarterbacks may not get hit quite as much, but, you know, there's a lot of those guys limping around as well, my old colleagues. So, I'm happy for him. He's in a very good spot, and he's got a whole life ahead of him. You know, and an intact brain and body. I think that he'll really appreciate when he, you know, gets to be my age. You know, almost 60.
Great young man, Oliver. Thank you very much. How about we dig into some Parigi?
Oh my gosh!
All right,
I can't wait.
Time to go. Thank you for the interview. We appreciate it.
That's good.
That'll do it for Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5 Podcasts at podcastarena.com. You can also get it at iTunes. By the way, head over to Facebook Soccer Matters. Lots going on over there. We would love the like. We would love responses to you on all the topics that we post. Tomorrow night at Soccer Matters on Horn FM up in Austin, Texas, we will have the technical director of Austin FC, Claudio Reyna. This is an interview you will not want to miss. For the great Andrew Carlson, for Trey stepping in tonight as well, and for Victor Ariza, I'm Glenn Davis. Don't forget, Soccer Matters.